The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Good morning to you, Mr. Bansraj. How are you?
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here, man.
And the last time we met, we spoke about positive youth development and your role with your organization to, you know, bring forward the message of looking at the treatment of men and young boys, etc. Please give us once again your journey into this sphere of, I would say, you know, youth interaction and youth advocacy, especially right. in terms of boys and men. So tell me about yourself.
Right. So thanks so much. Well, my name is Richie Bansraj, and I'm an advocate for men's rights and also like to highlight men and boys' issues that are faced in Trinidad and Tobago and the Caribbean region, as well as the whole globe in general. So why am I so passionate about it? Because let me give you an example. Recently, in August month, we had so many suicides. By the way, it is Suicide Prevention Awareness Month.
It is.
So we had so many suicides within the August month period, and it was men, you know. It was only men that was suicides, and that was a period of like about 10 days. We had like about 7 suicides, back to back. So we need to advocate for safe spaces for our men, because we realize that men are committing the crimes, the boys are committing the crimes too, and they are also dying by suicide. So we need to find ways as to why we can address these issues too, because yes, women and girls have their issues, but if you want to be equitable, you want to really look at the issues that men and boys face in society too. And also when it comes to youth development, well, about half of Trinidad and Tobago's population is considered youth. So youth are the young men, the young women as well, and we need to do different things that are based on their needs for society's development, rather than just the needs of what the older persons think in society, what the young people need. Back then, they used to be more saying what the young people need. Like, they need education, this, that, and the other, according to their lines. But in reality, young people could do different things now. You can make money playing video games. I always talk about that one.
Well, yeah, the last time we were here, we discussed that as well, because it's a new mode of play / work, or work that looks like play. And I realize that many, respectfully, of course, the elderly amongst us find that, you know, that is not work. You're on the computer whole day. They see you, you know, not engaging with real persons. So, you know, it's like you just wasting your life on this thing playing game. However, and a live streaming as well, I noticed that there is this trend where persons stream their lives, what they're doing, how they get up, when they wake up in the morning, etc. And, you know, broadcasting their entire life online. And they make money from it. They get sponsors. There are do-it-yourself channels now where people renovating whole houses with brand names coming and sponsoring different, you know, aspects of the house. Like, there's this guy who decided to go to, I believe it's one of either Russia or one of these far-off countries. No, it's not Russia. Sorry, it's one of the Euro countries. So I know that they have this plan now where you can buy a house for about, I think it's 1,500 euro or something like that. Completely dilapidated, total mess, because everybody is moving from the rural areas into the cities for, you know, looking for jobs. And they want these places repopulated. And he made a whole TikTok channel on renovating this house and all the neighbors coming and helping him. And he's making money. It's a different lifestyle, clearly. And I think, too, it's the way in which we look at jobs. Is it that the way in which we look at jobs needs to change?
Yeah, so it's good that you mentioned that, too, because I also create content. By the way, I'll be in the doing hikes and be in the bush and all these kind of things as well, promoting Trinidad and Tobago's beauty. And then we'll have people who want to sponsor that'll reach out to me, that promoting Trinidad and Tobago's culture. So like food, mm-hmm. it will have things like also like, let me say, if you're going into the bush, you have things for bug spray. So mm-hmm. all of these means that you could make money from, like as a content creator myself. And it's system rich, in case you want to check it out.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be pushing the beaches and stuff like that. And you could make money like that too. Now, it isn't for everybody. Yeah? That is not for everybody, because it takes a lot of effort and time. And also knowing your market,
mm-hmm.
knowing your target audience as well. So it needs to have different ways that we young people could target persons to do different types of jobs. So we just need to, we need to see what the needs are in society and adapt to suit, because AI too might replace some of the jobs that are already there. Look at the days of back in the days when in service commission it used to have the typist position. It still exists, you know, a typist position in government. What is that? What is that position? Like a typist, that's all you just do, like supposed to do, right?
Yeah, you're supposed to type letters, and that was the position.
But now that typist position, they don't just type. They literally type and they do other administrative work. So all of the typists there, they are very versatile in that they don't just type. But the position itself need to be updated to just not just be clerk typist or whatever. It need to be changed, and also the pay need to be increased because it's more work they're doing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So all of these things change. And with AI, we might have business jobs being taken over as well. And as young people coming up in society, we have a lot of issues that we're facing, Anna. When you're looking at the job dynamic,
mm-hmm.
this story, this guy, Rahim.
Mm-hmm. I just read the post, actually. And that's what I started the show with, because yesterday we were discussing the situations in schools. I mean, it was what, the third or fourth day of the week? No, Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And young girl fighting teacher. And I, you know, decided we need to talk about what is really going on in terms of the mental space that young people are in. And lo and behold, last night, seeing that post by Rahim, where he's speaking mm-hmm. about, I went to school, did all the right things, basically, and still struggling to find proper employment. One that can last, because he talked about finding the job, then losing the job, had to train the person who's coming to take over his job, and now he's wondering, you know, what was all of this for? What was it all for? 6 years of my life getting my degree, getting master's, and still struggling. So how do we, you know, from a youth development perspective, how do we talk to the young people to, you know, survive in this workspace?
Yeah, so that sounds like a simple question, but
it's real complicated.
Heavy. It's a real heavy question. So I have a few things that I want to break down, and I want to flesh out a little bit. So youth development and structural changes. So I'm a sociologist as well, right? Mm-hmm. By academics as well as by practice. So in sociology, we see a mismatch between the educational attainment and the labor market absorption in Trinidad and Tobago. So the system produces the graduates, but doesn't create the quality jobs to match, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there is a misbalance. So youth unemployment and underemployment as well is a serious issue. And you will be working, you have your degree, you have your master's, and again, pay like somebody who have just CXE
entry level.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So it affects your self-esteem, it affects your mental health, and your long-term life chances. So that's where we see young people getting anxious. They're starting to get into fights. Mm-hmm. They don't know how to react to these things. They're falling into depression, all of these things. So we need to focus on positive youth development, which is, it stresses on the focusing on a young person's opportunities, skills, and their own agency. So that meaning like their own ability to make decisions. Remember, we talk about like creating content and how they can get money from that, and mm-hmm. Twitch streaming and all them kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So those things we want to look at. So then we want to look at this one now. So this one is one of the ones that I also like to highlight.
Mm-hmm.
Two pensions. the older people holding these spaces in these jobs. Oh, I have experienced it as well, right? At the highest level of government, because I worked in government for the past 11 years, many older professionals occupy, some of them, you don't even call them professionals, right? Many older professionals occupy roles long past their retirement. So we notice that person's retiring and they're coming back on contract and they're staying there in those positions and leaving the, blanking the opportunities, well, taking up a space for the opportunities for the young person to actually get there, because the organization might say, let me hire somebody who have real years experience. But in reality, the young person is more versatile. They're more keen on using computers. I know old people in government, right? They're typing with one finger. Why are you still there? You type in one, you can barely write an email. And you asking other people in the organization to write your email for you, when we can get younger persons that can write that email as well as do your work for you. But they don't, you know what? The organizations, even government organizations, don't want to take that risk. It's too much of a risk. So they prefer to go with what they know. So the older persons are taking up the spaces of the younger persons. We know this for a fact. Now, there are older persons that are very versatile, and we're not saying that how retirement age means that all they need to get out and stop working. But they can mentor the younger persons as well. We need to find a balance, right? We need the older persons to also work with the young people, not just because they need to have experience.
But and the thing is, we cannot forget that experience, especially when it comes to business, experience is gold. Experience is key. So, as you said, finding that balance where that experience can guide the younger ones as to how to really shape and manage and complete their new ideas. Because the world of work has changed. We know that. And we seen that we are at an age where young people can teach older ones a lot and vice versa. You know, we're trying to each echo out a space of our own, and that's where the tensions clash. Do we need to research what the new job world looks like so that everyone is on the same page?
Yeah, so we're supposed to adapt, but Trinidad and Tobago tends to adapt slowly but surely. We are adapting. We have HR professionals that I've spoken to that are engaging in getting more young people involved, and they are more positive on the young person's involvement. However, we have some kind of, our systems need to change from the top level. And I believe recently the politicians were mentioning it. The prime minister was mentioning it, that the contract system is not really all that great, and they want to bring back the service commission permanent, quote-unquote, jobs back now, because the contract system is kind of like when you look at it, it's kind of like modern-day slavery, you know. Because you really have to work a certain set of hours. You have to follow a set of things. You're signing off your hours of life to that person. And then the contract, when the contract done, that's it. You're done. They don't care about you. That's it. You're going through. So I think that we need to focus more on getting the permanent, like more long-term jobs. We do, young people, to really have, yes, it have jobs, but does it have a career?
And I think that's one of the things we need to define between job and career. Do you want a job or do you want a career? Because career means longevity.
Yep.
Right? A job is just, you know, something probably that you do for now. Like a university student wants a job. A person coming out of university after all of the qualifications and all of that is deciding to have a career, you know, because they want that longevity. There was one thought that crossed my mind as you were speaking there, but I'll remember it in a minute. And it's something that, going back to it now, contract work. As much as I understand the ramifications of the way in which contracts were used, when I was having this discussion, I felt it necessary that we understand the way in which the word contract is being used in the scenario. Now, persons of higher positions, let's say chairman, CEO, etc., they have contracts. And mm-hmm. within that contract, it stipulates what their job specs are, what is expected, their remuneration perks, etc. Right? Now, the word contract has been applied to the way in which employment happens within the public sector. And they're saying that that contract situation has disrupted the way in which jobs are available or how it looks, right? And it needs to be revisited. And I agree with that. What is making it very shaky is the lack of stability and a sense of career. You understand? When is contract work? Because persons can't get loans. Persons can't, in terms of insurance, medical benefits, pension, and so on, that is not available to them once you're working on quote unquote contract. So, is it that we need to address the stability of persons on contract that so that they feel better knowing, all right, well, if it is that I'm working for 3 years, at least I'll be getting 3 years of medical benefits. 3 years of, you know, that sort of thing. Do you think that that would change the way in which contract work is done?
You're lucky if you get a three-year contract in government. At least from my experience, right. You're lucky.
Mm-hmm.
But they need to find that they do have perks. They do have perks. Like, for example, in government, you get paid more if you are a contract worker within the same contractual position that a permanent worker has. So, like, if you are a field officer,
mm-hmm.
you are a contracted field officer, and there is your friend in the, your colleague is a field officer, but through service commission, public service, they will get less pay, and you will get more contractual pay than them.
Mm-hmm.
But they will also have traveling and all these other things too. Your traveling will be one fixed amount of traveling.
Mm-hmm.
Their traveling is how much distance they actually go and all these kind of things. But at the end of the day, your pay may actually be higher than theirs. So that is the benefit, one of the benefits, as well as gratuity,
mm-hmm.
where you receive a lump sum of money after the contract period,
mm-hmm.
you get paid that. So that is the benefits of the contract compared to actual permanent work. But now, when it comes to the contract job and something that you was talking about, when you was mentioning this earlier, one thing that came across my mind is the issue of cronyism and nepotism. As a sociologist, I look at these things, right? Nepotism is a serious, serious thing in Trinidad and Tobago, where people just hire people based on, yeah, I know you, you're my friend, I can bring you in one time. Mm-hmm. No interview, no nothing. It happens. But at the end of the day, we could fight it, yeah. But sometimes what I just tell young people now is that, yeah, make your friends. Build your networks, because that is what you have to do. Yeah, you're introverted, but you need to find that balance where you have to be a little extroverted. Make friends. Mm. Make friends in all kind of places, because you don't know, and don't fall out with everybody. You don't know if that person you fall out with today going to be sitting on in the opposite table with you the next day as an interviewer, interviewing you for a job. So always make friends and try to pull your own links and use nepotism to your own advantage. Like, literally, I just tell them that. But the contract system,
that sounds so controversial. I just have to say
it
sounds but the thing is, the way in which the environment, exactly, the reality is, you know, you have to look at how things are, and this is one of the things that I asked a little earlier on. Should we really research the way the new job world exists and adapt to suit?
Yeah. So we need to. We need to, especially with, I looking at, when you mentioned that, I thinking of the persons in government, because that's my experience, right? Mm-hmm. Working with persons in government, because I believe like the private sector has been adapting to suit, you know, because they have been bringing in persons for marketing and media and all of these kind of things, and they have been adapting to suit. But government is a little slower with how they adapt and involve new job titles and all these kind of things, because it takes long. It is taking real long to change anything in government, because I have worked with, when you're working with files, it'll take forever.
Well, this is my next question. Now, should the public sector take heed from the private sector and adopt the ways in which the private sector works?
some aspects. I can't say all, because some of it are really, really business oriented, but I would just, in a basic sense, just say some of it. Because, like, for example, the technological part of things, government is real backward. They're real, real, real backward. But we have a new Ministry of Digital Transformation. I believe it's that's what it's called. Mm-hmm. And they are actually doing things for like AI and also starting to span out throughout the rest of government ministries and do like cloud systems and all these kind of things so everybody could have access to things. But we are progressing. And when you look at our Trinidad and Tobago compared to the other Caribbean islands, we actually real good, you know, in terms of digital landscape. Mm-hmm. Now, when you compare us to the westernized countries, now we have a little ways to go. But we're still climbing that ladder, and we're changing the dynamics slowly but surely. And government should definitely take some aspects from the private sector, because remember, the private sector is competitive, so they have to be on top of one another to make sure that they get in their sales and things like that. So yeah, that's why I would recommend that we look at some aspects of it.
Now, here's a interesting question. Do you think that the way that the new job world or the new job market is appearing now, do you think that degrees and certificates and master's degrees, doctorates and so on, really important? Obviously for certain jobs, yes, obviously. But for others, do you think it's really necessary to have your children go to university and all of that?
That's a real good question. So the university system, I went through the university system. Mm-hmm. Some people would say, is it a really necessary thing? No, because when you look at it, they're looking to make money, you know. These universities looking to make money. Now, when it is that they teach you a course and wherever it is, and they have lecturers and you graduate with a degree.
Mm-hmm.
Them flinging you out into society. If you get a job, you get a job. If you ain't get a job, then that's, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I feel like the universities need to be more liable in terms of actually having substance. So let me say if they give you a degree, if you do get a job, you're paying your money for them, to get a degree. You're paying your money for them. And you go on and you get your degree and you're looking for a job and you ain't getting on within a 5-year period. 5 years you're looking for a job. I find the university should pay you back. I find so.
Well,
because in reality, they give you a useless degree that was useless to the economy and the market. So you pay money for them and it's scam, yeah. It come like it was a scam in general, right? So that is what I look at in general. So it has degrees that are like engineering, being a doctor and all these kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
But some of them are literally just created, they call it fodder. Further or filler degrees, filler courses, all of these things that people just do because the university just wants to make money.
And
it is a business.
This is why I would bring back Raheem Cummings as an example of this. Because after, as he says, those 6 years included a bachelor's degree, a master's degree. He didn't quite say what field it was, but I'm thinking it's something that, you know, you have to put in a lot of work for. And being offered a contract, and then, you know, within this, by this year two, you're told that you're no longer needed, but you end up training your replacement, and now, you know, you're just out there. The thing is, many persons are saying that you have YouTube, you have other training, you have other ways of gaining that experience, of the degrees, not necessarily the experience, but the knowledge of the degrees, so that it doesn't make sense going to a university. But the thing is, the courses and so on that are offered by the universities are no longer applicable to the job market that exists now. Because like we said earlier on, people are on content creation, nomad, I'm honestly thinking about Karen Rose, who comes up for the digital world as well, because he's a digital nomad. That's the word I'm looking for. You know, where you do your business remotely. Look at the other day when we had the huge traffic jam coming into Port of Spain for the first day of school. The automatic talk was, hey, I want to go back to remote working. It worked during COVID. So, you know, why can't we do that? Need to pay attention to how the job market and what people consider jobs now.
Exactly. So that whole thing too with the work from home, private organizations, that's one of the things that government could adapt. Private organizations have been doing work from home for a long time now, but government taking a real long to adapt those kind of things. And in reality, we need to have that system in place so that we have more productivity. Now, that's an argument, because some people say, well, if you leave government workers home, the done doesn't do enough in the office already, but if you leave them home, they ain't going to do nothing. But in reality, come now, man. You're going to paint and label everybody the same way. So we need to adapt with all of the different types of job markets. And you're right, the courses, but I wouldn't say the majority, but some of the courses are definitely, and the whole degrees are definitely not applicable to modern day society's needs. So, but universities will keep pumping them out. It will keep pumping out the unnecessary degrees and all these kind of things because they want money. They are business, so they want, and universities in Trinidad and Tobago, I'm not going to mention them, but they have been undertaking comparative analysis to see how much money other universities worldwide have been making in comparison to them with regard to certain courses so that they could raise their prices and charge more for certain things. Now, as I say, I completely agree with the fact that if you come out of university and 3-5 years you ain't get a job with that same degree, they need to pay you back. And then they will actually make, if you put them under that type of pressure, they will actually make courses that will allow you to get a job. Literally, that will be the case.
The thing is, another problem that I realized, and it came up recently in the news with a certain university, we're not going to call the university name. I'm wondering if you know of the story. Accreditation is another problem that seems to be an issue, but not really addressed.
Yeah, accreditation is a, It is, but we need, if the university has their courses and they have their degrees and stuff like that, accreditation is one of the ways that they actually show that how they have value. Now, I don't know what article you're talking about or which university you're talking about, but I just say that statement as a blanket statement. But accreditation is how they prove that how their course could have some value to the society.
No, as in the particular course was stopped. It was a whole big thing. Anyway, I don't want to get too much into it, but the main issue was accreditation after those students complete the course and then being able to apply for work. It seems that when they do check it, they realize that, you know, there seems to be a discrepancy in, you know,
That sounds like a scam to me.
Well, that's why I'm not really referring to it, but it is in the public domain for those who could check it out. One person
accredited, and you go to get a job and they say, no, well, this degree is not accredited, and you pay your money to do something that come like you doing something in the side of the road.
There was a whole protest on it too. But I will send you a little message and let you know exactly which one it is. But the thing is, persons are giving of their time to do these courses, to, you know, do the right thing, as they say, to make sure that they have their qualifications and apply for the job, and are still waiting and wondering, you know, when am I going to be able to pay my bills, be comfortable like everybody else? As a person who is a youth advocate, do you see any assistance for young people? Because we have our next batch that we're preparing for graduation and so on just now. You know, we have a year again and then our next batch is out there. So how do we prepare for that?
Really, right. So we need to, so we have a Ministry of Sport and Youth Affairs. It used to be Ministry of Youth Development and National Service. So Ministry of Youth had its own ministry, but now it's part of Ministry of Sport. So that means I am advocating, and I have been talking to persons in the Ministry of Youth as well, to see, well, Ministry of Sport and Youth, to see that we make sure and tailor stuff, jobs, that is, towards the needs of youth. So create youth development positions and stuff like that for youth, by youth. And also we have a national youth policy, which we need to adhere to. Now, all government, if it's a policy, that's a government policy, all government ministries are supposed to adhere to it. I believe in every single ministry is supposed to have a youth focal point. That being a young person within a position of power that has the perspectives and the, knows what the needs of youth are within that particular ministry. So like Ministry of Transport, you will have a young person that will bring forth to the table to the older persons who have the positions of power as to what the needs of the young persons are with regards to transport. The same thing with health. What are the needs of young persons with regards to health? So like diabetes awareness, pre-diabetes awareness, eating, drinking, certain things, cutting off soft drink. That is one of the needs as well too in terms of the Ministry of Health. So what I'm saying is that we need to, it's called youth mainstreaming. Youth mainstreaming, which means involving youth at all levels of government. I notice my focus is basically government because that's my experience. And I think youth mainstreaming is something that we have been overlooking for the past few years, actually. And we need to push more and have stable positions where we create an actual job for the young person to be there in the ministries as youth youth advisors or something like that. And not tokenistic youth. We have a problem in Trinidad and Tobago, and plenty of people know this, but they wouldn't say anything, right? And it might be controversial, but we have a lot of young persons in positions of power in certain ministries and stuff like that that may be considered the youth advisor. But in reality, they are just being tokenistic youth. Being that they are just the person who is the higher up in the ministry will just say, yeah, we have young people perspective. We have this young person here. But that young person didn't say nothing. That young person is just listening to what the higher up is saying. And it's being an echo chamber of what the person in position of power wants. So they are, in a essence, being a kind of puppet.
Well, then the young person needs to be as strong as within themselves to you know, make sure that their voice is heard. I was going to be cheeky and say, don't put them on contract. But, you know, I mean, we already know that that's not really working out. Lastly, we have a couple more minutes before 10 o'clock. And you did speak to, you know, giving the youth representative within the ministries a little more, should I use the word leeway, or a little more teeth within their own perspectives as to how the youth should be transitioning into adult life. And so that, you know, persons like Raheem would be, you know, well taken care of after giving that sacrifice of time and making sure that they, you know, build themselves in terms of, you know, accreditation, degrees and so on, and have a successful career after that. I'm thinking, because in my mind, I'm just, you know, going back to the topic of the gaming world, the nomad world, working remotely, all of these new age positionings that, as much as we don't want to accept it, and as you said, Trinidad and Tobago is a little behind, or very behind as the application of these things, where these things are concerned, we still have to conquer, or at least be willing to accept that AI is another whole industry that we have to tackle. And you spoke about, you know, it obviously going to reduce some jobs that, I know we made a little fun about the typist position, but AI could, you know, easily take over that position. How do we manage youth in that perspective where AI is concerned? And I mean, it does affect the older generation as well. What is your positioning on that?
Yeah, so the question is about AI. Now, that's a real tricky In general, even in the US, is a real tricky and controversial subject because people of the opinion either that it's real taking away all the jobs and we're going to be jobless, or it can actually just create new jobs and empower the young people more than the older persons, because the younger persons know how to use the AI to create new ideas and new initiatives.
Do you think that some older ones may be threatened by that idea?
Of course, they're threatened by young people in general. We know this. We have, from general experience in Trinidad and Tobago, as well as the Caribbean region, older persons, not all, don't come after me, but not all of them, they are threatened by the younger persons coming up and taking their positions, literally. That is what they're scared of. And that is why they keep coming back in the same positions and bringing back the older persons and stuff like that. Because they know the young persons will start to change things in the ministries, start to change things in the organization. Because one of the scariest things for us humans is that C word. Change. Because we like comfort. Another C word. We like comfort and we like to continue doing what it is that we know. But change is inevitable, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Change is not something that not going to ever happen. It will happen. So as much as this stopping this AI thing, and as much as older persons saying how AI might be this way or that way and actually be a bad thing for society, the younger persons will be using it to change society for the better and make things easier for themselves. AI makes... I wish I had AI when I was going through university. You know how much easier things would have been? I hand research all of them things, get books and all kind of things for my sociology degree and master's. So it is crazy. It is
Do
inevitable.
You, I'm sorry, but I have to say that as much as I appreciate AI where that is concerned, I think a good balance between the two would help. Because going to the library and actually picking up a book is still something that should be treasured, because there's a wealth of knowledge there that you could say is genuinely accurate because it is in a book. AI has the way of generating that information as it pulls different resources together.
Yes.
Definitely. My generation kind of stuck in the two, fascinated by the new technologies and the ways in which these things are being applied to day-to-day life. And in some cases, it does make it a whole lot easier. But still don't want to lose some of the traditions, because there are some fantastic stories and notes of history. And as you say, the way change has been handled throughout the generations and ages that we still need to hold true to and keep it as reference, because we still have a whole lot of change to go through. A whole lot of change
books
to come.
It will ever be obsolete. Books in particular will never become something that somebody don't want to use. I think something with humanity is they love to sit down and read a book. Even though it might not be the most time-efficient way to see about something, because literally you can pull up a book on your computer anyway, anytime, and read it, when in reality, sometimes you might have to go in a library and physically read a book, right? Because you don't have possession of it. You might not have the money to buy the book, right? Now, I want to look at this aspect of things. So, let me say the compact disc. You remember CDs?
Of course, yeah.
And look what happened to CDs. You don't have even CD drives. My laptop that I doing this interview from right now don't even have a CD drive.
What is that?
It changed.
Yeah.
It changed. So things have been changing to adapt to suit. But books in particular, it going through a kind of struggle with the AI and also online books and stuff like that, trying to fight it. But people like to sit down and read the book still.
There's nothing like a hardcover book in your hand. That's just me. I mean, it could be a lot of other people.
I don't like to read. I don't like to sit down and read books, though. I just use the computer. So.
Ah, you're the audiobook type.
Yeah. I'll sit down and do all my research online itself, because you can copy and paste and write and type and stuff easier. I can't literally, I've been using the computer so much, I forget how to write. Younger persons in general, I talk to a lot of youth. Some of them just don't know how they could sign, but they just write very, like, the handwriting isn't the best.
Listen, they don't know what cursive is. What is cursive? Cursive is is a foreign language.
I am one of them.
You're serious? So, I mean, this conversation alone tells us that we really need to probably put together a committee or a task force that really looks at how much things have changed in terms of the way in which we do things that can be applied to the education system for the next 5-10 years, because there is going to be a lot of change that we have to be prepared for. And I mean, if and cursive, you know, we in some problems. Mr. Bansraj, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. It's always a pleasure to speak with you. And yeah, we will have another conversation soon.
Thank you very much for having me. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Take care.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.